From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The 74th session of the UN General Assembly opened its first regular session on Tuesday, and that was kicked off with a press conference with this year's president of the General Assembly, the former permanent representative from Nigeria, Tijani Muhammad Bande. And we bring you as much of this press conference as time will allow.
Almost two decades and nothing has been done. And it's a matter of vital importance to African countries in particular, which have been shut out of the permanent membership. How do you plan to speed up the process? Do you plan to have more meetings of the intergovernmental negotiation process, maybe for a longer period of time, and also move towards a text-based negotiations? Thank you.
I think the reform process is as important to Africa as it is to all heads of state and government and all member states. I mean, in the sense that it is a principle, the principle being democratization. And for Africa, which was the question you asked, Africa has been completely left out of membership in the permanent category. But the reform of the council involves many others as well. The negotiations, as you have said, have not been fast because we want to make sure there has been consensus. That consensus has not been forthcoming. There are major gaps in understanding what the correct number should be in terms of total number of members of the council to make it effective, still representative, and the debate concerning what to do with veto, should it continue, if it continue, in what form. That, again, is being discussed. The question of what other regions should have more representation is also part of it. Yes, it has been very slow, but our commitment is to see that we use whatever tools are available through the IGN to narrow the gap so that we come to a point where we can see there's light at the end of the long tunnel, that yes, there will be fair and representative and effective reform of the council. This is where we are at. The rollover of the process is what we'll take over from and see how far we can push, and we are committed to doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Abdul Hamid Sayam from the Arabic daily Al-Quds Al-Arabi. I have two questions. First, about the items traditionally discussed in the GA and had been moved to the Security Council, such as poverty, development, root causes of conflict, many issues. Traditionally belong to the GA, and now they are discussed in the Security Council. What can you do to re-energize and re-empower the GA to discuss all these items originally belongs to the GA? And the second, do you have plans to visit conflict area that may include West Bank and Gaza? Thank you.
Well, I think when issues are cast in terms of their direct relationship to fueling large-scale conflict, some countries have found a way to discuss them in the council. There are debates concerning whether that is an unnecessary expansion. But in the council, of course, you see women, peace, and security discussed in the council. It doesn't mean, and it has not meant, that these are not being discussed also in the General Assembly, because the issues of negotiation are still on the same issues, financing issues, second committee issues. So no, it's not that they are removed from discussion, but there have been, yes, true, some discussion on some matters in the sense of how they are connected to conflict that have been discussed in the council. Some issues to do with climate change also have been discussed in the context of their relationship to peace and security, either regionally or globally as well.
What about the second question?
Certainly, we are prepared to go to any place where it is possible for our calendar to allow us to go. We are operating in the presidency of the assembly, and these matters are important. When we have opportunity to travel to those places, we'll travel to those places, no problem at all.
Thank you. Joseph Klein, Canada Free Press. First of all, could you tell us on the record what your, let's say, top three priorities are for your presidency? As the prior president, your predecessor, did. I think she had seven. And secondly, how would you comment on President Trump's statement during his speech to the General Assembly last week that the future does not belong to globalists, it belongs to patriots, and he talked a lot about national sovereignty. Could you elaborate on your views on that? Thank you.
Well, first, my priorities, I think, have been stated beyond the first element, which is a priority for every presidency, which is peace and security, which is the most basic element created the organization. I think we're very clear as to poverty eradication, quality education, climate action, and inclusion. These are the issues we have prioritized. And these ones, again, are not new issues in our view. These are already agreed to as part of the SDGs, really. Now, the question for me, not to comment on any particular head of state or government, but to say this is a forum wherein people come to air their views. And the forum is multilateral. There is no question it is a multilateral organization, and people will have and can have legitimate discussion concerning how they think the organization or multilateralism is going, or how best to structure relations among nations. No country has said the UN is not relevant in the way it operates. I have listened to speeches. So our understanding is that the countries you mentioned are committed to the UN. They are funding, like they have, like it's known. So I think ours is to say that for the United Nations, it's very clear that solving the problems in the scale and the competence and speed required, I think, can only happen through multilateral efforts. I think that one is an issue that is also clear. But nations are able to disagree on this or that. That's fine. That is why it's a debate. Thank you.
James Bayes from Al Jazeera. A follow-up question to that. The threat to multilateralism, because as already in the previous question, you had the Trump speech stressing nationalism and individual countries putting their interests first. You had a very different approach with the Franco-German-led Alliance for Multilateralism. How do you see your role on this? Do you see yourself as the guardian of multilateralism? And a related question, the Secretary-General in his speech to the General Assembly talked about the world dividing into two poles, a China-run bloc and a US-run bloc. He termed the phrase the Great Fracture. It seems to be something that's seriously concerning the Secretary-General. Do you share those concerns?
Well, we all are guardians of the Charter, and we must be. Otherwise, we shouldn't be here. So the Charter is very clear as to why we have this organization. And it's also very clear to adults what could happen if we operated in our just best interest regardless, I think that's all I can say. It's very clear where this organization was created. It's very clear what it has done. And I imagine what it would be if we didn't have a system that allows countries, big and small, to have respect and to say, this is what I see about this matter without coercion. I think that the issue. Now, the Secretary General's statement, not to comment on it, but my reading of it is simply a warning that let us not go in the path of a new order revolving around states that see themselves in oppositional terms. I think that is the warning that I think is important. And I think that's my reading of it, that let us make sure we have a world in which we are not dealing with creating of spaces for satellites to go back to the issue of people fighting as proxies, when in fact we have a better world wherein everyone openly is free and equal and can bring to the table something. I think that is the approach. That is the warning, as I see it.
Ibis Frade from Prensa Latina, thank you for your briefing. In the general debate, many countries spoke out against the U.S. blockade against Cuba. I just want to know what's your opinion on that issue of the unilateral sanction. Does you have any comment on that? Thank you.
I think I don't have an opinion. The advice has been very clear that it would be unhelpful. We need spaces to reduce tension. I think there is nothing more to say. I mean, the assembly has taken a view and the numbers are clear. I think our hope is that we find ways to reduce differences and to push toward an understanding of the necessity to have a freer world. I think that is already something that is not my view. Is what the members have stated. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. President. My name is Fumitaka Sato from NHK. My question is about nuclear disarmament, which you just mentioned at the opening remark. So now the nuclear ban treaty is underway for the taking into effect. Now the 32 countries already ratified, another 18. What is the projection of the timing when that it will be taking into effect?
Well, I'm not sure when the remaining numbers will come on board to make it into effect. But nuclear disarmament is an important part of the UN agenda for human beings, for individuals, forget about states. And I think it is an area in which we expect civil society organizations to play a role, and they are playing a role in many issues, including nuclear disarmament issues. And I think what can only be said is that it is our hope that we get to a point where all the elements related to disarmament get to a point where we can say there's consensus that we don't need nuclear tests, we don't need nuclear weapons, and the distrust that perhaps fuels the creation of nuclear weapons and their sharpening, I think is abated. No, I cannot predict in the next 2 years we'll get the number, but I think, yes, it is important, and the calls have been made by myself and by others to get member states to sign on so that the treaty can come into effect. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Mary T. Lavelle with Kyoto News. I wanted to ask about the UN Charter itself, sorry, Kyoto News. I wanted to ask about the UN Charter itself. I know that Security Council is talking about reform, and the last time the Charter was amended was, I think, back in the 70s, and it was just to increase the Security Council. Do you think there should be an amendment to the UN Charter to address certain powers of the Security Council? Or to should the UN Charter be amended in any way at all? Do you think that now, in order to move forward as far as goals of the SDGs and getting other member states to sign on and become a bit more open to change, that something in the Charter needs to change as well?
Well, I think a review of any document after 50 years, I think it's not a bad thing. So long as it can be done with a bit more objectivity than some of the debates have pointed to. But the more prudent approach has been taken, that is to reform the council in a particular direction. The parameters for have been set in terms of the various elements of that reform. One taken, they will address the nature of the council, including its members, its membership, and its powers. So that is there. A full-scale review may be more difficult, and you can see even this more limited review has taken this long, and that is the issue. So it is our hope that certainly when we succeed in concluding the current reform, there have been reform of the secretariat. Of course, it's a bit less known than that of council. There are also efforts to reform even the General Assembly in terms of how it does its work. But the more well-known, the better known reform is that of the Security Council. It has taken longer. And once it is done, I think some of the elements you are talking about will have been addressed.
Oh, good morning. Thank you, Mr. President. I am Gary Ronaldo with Diplomatic Times. And my question is on the xenophobic attacks between Nigeria and South Africa. Do you have any plan to address this serious issue? Because these are two powerful countries, Nigeria and South Africa. The other countries look up to for leadership. And if they're fighting, having conflict, it sends out a negative image around the world. Thank you.
Well, I think the problem in South Africa, of which you referred to, affected Nigeria. It also affected other countries. It's just not Nigerians. But that if you had listened to the statement delivered by the South African foreign minister, it was very clear that they are taking this as a matter they will address. I think read the second page of that statement. It answered the question very clearly from the perspective of the South African leadership. And I think that is the approach, because certainly whether Nigeria and South Africa are major countries on the continent given leadership, even if they are not, what has happened should not have happened. And I think that has been acknowledged. And I can also tell you that the continent has ways of dealing with this matter. Buhari is going to South Africa in 2 days' time. This was already agreed to, and it was not changed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Ahmed Fati, American Television News. You mentioned that peace and security still stands on the top of your priorities, like your predecessors. Now we see that the phenomena of the Daesh or the Islamic State is mushrooming into different areas. Example, West Africa. We have now the Islamic State in the West Africa province, which was a split from Boko Haram in 2016. And there are reports now that they are using even a higher level of technology. There is an exchange of experiences from fighters in Libya and other parts in the Middle East. Do you consider under your presidency to hold a joint event or a high-level event together with the Security Council discussing this phenomena that's impacting a part that's impoverished, an impoverished part of the world? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I think, well, I'm not very sure what the links are between Boko Haram and some other organizations. I cannot really comment on that one. I mean, I've seen reports, but I've not seen anything concrete. But what I do know is that Boko Haram has ravaged quite a bit of part of West and Central Africa, particularly Nigeria, Niger Republic, Cameroon, and Chad. But there has been quite a lot of work, joint multinational task force, which has degraded Boko Haram, and it's a bit more isolated now. But yes, the problem of Libya has had an impact. If you know the area very well, as you do, there really are no borders, really. It's just open field. Some of these borders are really theoretical. People move easily in that part of the world. There have been historic ties between them, historical ties. And the ease with which weapons and vehicles are brought, I think, has created a bit of a problem. Yes, the region and the problem in the Sahel has also, with the poverty there, created a bit of a problem. That also was partly climate-induced. Yes, it is true. We will have meetings to share views and opinions concerning how the Council can work with the Assembly and even other bodies to address what are seen as the root causes of the problem. But leadership on this matter had been with the Council. As you know, during the presidency of Britain 2 years ago, the whole Council took the unprecedented move of going to the Northeast to see for itself what the situation was. And we were expecting a second visit, hopefully soon. But yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you again. Tomorrow, Mr. President, is the first anniversary of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. This crime has not yet faded. There are so many quarters called for international independent investigation team to find all the details of this crime. What are your opinions on this issue and the GA? Can the GA form an investigation team and find out what happened exactly and who's responsible for this crime? Thank you.
I think it's not an issue directly that the GA deals with. I think already the Council, some investigation has been, is ongoing. And I think it's not the way to repeat from the same process an investigation. Whatever the facts will be, I'm sure within the year or so, we'll find them. There has been a lot of discussion concerning press freedom, concerning related matters. I think that already is under investigation. The Assembly, as Assembly, is not dealing with this directly, other than general questions concerning freedoms. Thank you.
Inji Magzi from Egypt. My question about Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, as you know, اليوم السابع. My question about Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, as you know, Egypt faces a big and serious threat from it. How may Security Council on United Nations help in this issue?
Well, the question of the Nile and the action or inaction of states on the Nile, I think, has been a long discussion, especially with the coming to the end of the initial agreement. In the main, we're dealing with Uganda, Sudan, Egypt, and Ethiopia. I know that the African Union has been on this matter. I have not recent information, but I know from last year there have been a lot of meetings concerning this subject, and I can only hope that, especially with the presidency of the union being held by Egypt, this process will be hastened, and even if not during his presidency, the next presidency should take this up as an African matter. Other countries, I've always believed that there are some countries, some regions with a similar experience, and there are also in Africa itself, there are other sub-regional organizations that are dealing with this kind of issue. I know on the Niger, there's a cooperation of countries on the Niger that are also dealing with the same issues. I think ideas generated from how that had been handled within Africa and also by other partners and other regions in the world should help. It is a big matter. It's important. I still believe that the African Union should really take this as a very urgent matter before it gets out of hand.
Okay.
Yes. What are your views on the reported violence in Hong Kong today? There are reports that at least one protester was critically wounded. He was shot by one of the police officers. There have been Molotov cocktails exchanged between protesters and the police. Things seem to be getting out of hand again. What is your view on that? And in your capacity as president of the General Assembly, do you intend to put out a statement on today's violence? Thank you.
Well, sadly, on a general note, the protests, whatever their sources, in Hong Kong, should allow freedom of expression, but violence should not be encouraged by the government or by others in the conflict. I have no information other than I have seen this morning that it has gotten to a point where it is reported that police shot one person. The General Assembly is unable to put out information that unless it is sure what is there. And I do not know that the Secretariat has done this, but as a general principle, the right to protest should be is a guaranteed one in the UN, and member states are encouraged to allow for expression, and violence should not be encouraged on either side. I think that's all we can say for now, and we do hope that countries with some influence on either the protesters or the government concerned, be it the central or local government, should play a role to douse tension and allow for discussion. This is our approach for now. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.